Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 6 of Season 12 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 Frank Darabont movie, The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me this week is Nick Rehack of the Rabbit Hole podcast. So welcome back to the show, Nick, for yet another season.
Thank you for having me back for yet another season. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I love having you on. I just love having conversations with you. And so why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So why don't you tell me and everyone else, what is your background with the Shawshank Redemption?
Shawshank is one of those movies where I feel like I started watching it and I've never really stopped. It's one of those phenomena where if it's on, like, I'm watching it. And I think in all of my life, I've only ever seen it in its entirety from beginning to end, two, maybe three times. Everything else has always been catching the first hunk or the middle hunk or the end hunk. But it's one of those movies where if it's on, I'm just going to stop what I'm doing and I'm going to watch it. I think the cast is solid. I think it's well directed. Like, it's just through and through a really, really, really good movie. And seeing other Frank Darabont films and reading and kind of following more, you know, Stephen King. Because for the longest time, I thought like, oh, Stephen King is just horror and stuff like that. And it's like, well, no, there's some like, you know, drama elements and some not as horror heavy projects that he's done. So it kind of led me into that. But I think it was like sometime in end of middle, maybe early high school that my father, maybe my mother was watching it. I just kind of sat down and watched it with him. And then just ever since, anytime it's on, I just watch it.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. Yeah, I've seen it more than two or three times in its entirety. I can guarantee that. You know, but I'm glad that you were here to talk about Shawshank with me.
Yeah.
Minute 6 begins with Andy getting out of his car and ends with a shot of two people getting very passionate while the DA continues. So last week with Jay, we ended the week talking about the things going on in the courtroom, and we're going to continue there. And at this point, you know, we hear that the rendition from the DA. And at the same time, we see a drunk Andy getting out of his car. But what we hear is he says, "You've had all the evidence. You've heard all the evidence. You know the facts. We have the accused at the scene of the crime. We have footprints, tire tracks, bullets strewn on the ground which bear his fingerprints, a broken bourbon bottle, likewise with fingerprints. And most of all, we have a beautiful young woman and her lover lying dead in each other's arm." So as this, you know, as he's basically giving his closing statement, you know, we can see some of the things that he's talking about. You know, we see Andy get out of the car, and it looks like he's wearing like golf shoes, which is pretty funny. And you know, he steps on the bourbon bottle that he just drops, and we see that he drops some of the bullets. You know, so everything that the DA is telling us, we actually see as it's happening also. And the clever thing here, and again, this is a spoiler for anybody who hasn't seen this movie, but my assumption is that most whoever's listening to this has seen the movie. I mean, we know that Andy is innocent. So if he's innocent, what they're showing us makes it seem as if he is, you know, if he's guilty. And you can understand why the DA and the police and everyone think that he's guilty from this, but he's really not, which is so cool.
Yeah, I've always liked how it's framed in that way, because even as they're telling the story, like it's really nice because it doesn't feel like some kind of cut and dry reenactment, right? It really feels like a guy is narrating this story, and it's shot very well. It's very like clean in its execution, and it puts you there. You're there in that moment, especially when we get to some of the hotter and heavier scenes, if you will, towards the end of the minute. But just even him getting out of the car and like the slow walking too, and as the guy's describing, you know, the this crime of passion and everything, it just keeps building and building, and you're right there with him.
For sure. And what's amazing here is that, you know, it takes a while for us to really understand when watching this movie that Andy really is innocent of this crime. So, like you said, the way they frame it here is it could go either way. You know, and it's shot amazingly from that perspective. I mean, Frank Darabont knew when he made this how to keep the audience in suspense as to whether this man is innocent or guilty, because what they're showing us could lead to either way. You know, especially once he starts explaining, you know, that he wasn't there. So it could be either way. We get the credit for the director of photography, Roger Deakins, ESC. So I mean, I'm glad, and I've said this before, I'm glad that Deakins eventually got an Oscar for the type of work that he does. But in my opinion, he should have gotten it for this movie. I mean, this was just an amazingly filmed movie. Especially, I mean, we'll talk later about some of the panning shots and some of the overhead shots and things like that. And I mean, I'm not a, you know, movie, you know, I'm not someone who's a director and understands, you know, what a Dutch angle is and all that stuff. I mean, I could say the words and I don't understand what those things are. It doesn't matter to me. I mean, I've heard the terminology. That's the thing. I know the terminology, but I couldn't tell you, okay, I really understand what that means. And because I watched the movie for the content and not try to say, okay, well, you know, the director decided to shoot it from this particular angle to make you feel that this and this is happening and stuff like that. And like, I don't care. It usually does make me feel that way, but that's fine. You know, that's part of the whole thing. And the fact that Legends of the Fall beat this movie, just
What?
yes.
No. Legends of the Fall beat this out on cinematography? Get out of here.
That's right. John Toll won the Oscar instead of Roger Deakins that year.
Get out of here. No. And it was funny too, because as I'm watching this, I was like, oh yeah, Deakins did do this film. And so for me, I start to watch it and I look for flourishes of like other things and ways that Deakins has helped frame or light a shot before. So that was like kind of a fun thing to do. But that's bonkers to me that Legends of the Fall beat that out.
I agree. I mean, he was nominated like 16 times, and he has been nominated for like 16 times in his whole career.
That's
Yeah,
crazy to me.
16 times, and he won twice. You know, like everyone was so happy when he won in you know, for winning for Blade Runner 2049, which I mean, it's got nice cinematography, but it's not Shawshank. And then he won a second time 2 years later for 1917, which I completely understand. You
No,
know,
I
that's
absolutely understand.
that there's no question about that. But when you look at the way that everything is framed and shot in Shawshank, it baffles the mind how that's even possible.
Yeah,
But
it almost seems
apparently it is.
like kind of unfair.
Yeah, that's true. Again, I'm not knocking you know Noel. He John Toll, sorry, Toll. Not Noel. Noel is from Star Wars. There's John Noel is I think so. Whatever. So I mean, again, I can you know, he also John Toll also has won two Oscars. So, you know, I'm not saying that he's not a good cinematographer, but you know,
But
he won 2 years
he
in a
wasn't
row.
on Shawshank.
That's right. He won 2 years in a row. He won for Legend of the Fall and then Braveheart. I can understand winning for Braveheart too. That
I could see
I
that.
definitely can win. Can understand that. Even though I do like the cinematography of Apollo 13 too. But whatever. That's that's a separate issue. I wonder if Apollo 13 was even nominated for cinematography, because you know there were enough nubs for Apollo 13 that year, including Ron Howard. So, everyone knew he wasn't gonna. No, it wasn't. What do you know? Cinematography in 1995 was Braveheart, Batman Forever, A Little Princess, Sense and Sensibility, and Shanghai Triad.
Okay, that's a list.
Yeah.
Weird to think that Batman's an Academy Award nominated film.
Batman Forever. Batman Forever. It's
Yeah, especially at that.
true. Wow. Yeah, so
That's
obviously of
nuts.
those, it
That's
makes sense
nuts.
that Braveheart won. I actually watched Shanghai Triad not that long ago, and I liked the movie, but I wasn't that impressed
Yeah.
with the movie.
With the
So
look and feel.
I guess Apollo 13 used too many effects at the time so that they wouldn't give it that.
Maybe.
So okay, it could be, but like I said, I'm glad that Roger Deakins eventually won, but he just didn't win at the right time for the right movie. That's what it comes down to. But oh well, yeah, I don't get to vote, so I get to just gripe 32 years later.
Yeah.
What can I tell you? And at this point, Andy continues walking, and we see that he's looking out at the, I guess, bungalow where both his wife and the golf pro are having their interlude, I guess you could say. And then we get two more credits on screen with Liz Glatzer and David Lester, who are executive producers. So both of them have other credits also, obviously. This isn't the only movie that they both have worked on. Have you heard of either of them before?
I have not. And part of me wanted to look them up, but another part of me was like, don't, because maybe Rob will tell you who they are.
Okay, that's fair. Okay, so Liz Glatzer has 30 credits on IMDb as a
Whoa.
producer, including The Mist, surprisingly, right?
So they've probably done a lot of work with Frank Darabont then.
That would be my guess. The first movie that she produced was Sibling Rivalry. It's actually very interesting because she produced Sibling Rivalry with Kirstie Alley in 1990, and then in 1994 she produced Shawshank, and then the next movie she produced was in 2007, Music and Lyrics.
Okay.
And the same in 2007, she also produced Fracture and The Mist. So
Okay.
I'm
Took some
curious.
time off.
Yeah, that's a what is it, 13-year gap.
Yeah.
That's wow.
That's a whole other century.
Seriously. Yeah, and I mean IMDb doesn't say anything about her besides what she's known for. So I can't even try and guess what type of things. But what's even weirder is she's not even listed here as being one of the nominees for the Oscar for Shawshank, because maybe the rules at the time didn't give it to everybody.
Maybe it had to be a producer, not like an executive producer.
Well, you'd think that. Wouldn't you think that the executive producer would be the one? Or maybe, I don't
I don't know. You got me on that one.
know. I mean, according to IMDb, the only person that was nominated for Best Picture is Nikki Marvin, who I believe we will still get to her credit. But I don't think we've seen it yet. So that's interesting because she's listed, it says produced by, and then you have the two of them as executive producers. Maybe that's part of the quote unquote game, of what they play there. Interesting. Okay. I guess maybe again, it could have been that in
Yeah.
1994, the rules at the Oscars were a certain thing that a certain, you have to have certain credit in order to be nominee, one of the nominees or something like that. No idea.
Probably something silly.
I silly, I don't know if you want to clarify it that way, because
Well, I mean,
there were a lot of problems over the year.
well, what I'm saying is silly as in, like, a difference between producer and executive producer. Like, if you're a producer on the film, like, you should be part of that nomination kind of thing.
Right. So yeah, I don't know. So at this point, the second person there is David Lester, who he has been he was a producer on 15 different films, including Air Force One, and he even worked on he was part of production management on Star Wars, the
Oh,
original.
that's pretty cool.
So this is okay. Well, hey, there you go. He was also on Sibling Rivalry. I guess there's the connection between him and Liz Glatzer that they worked together. But he was the unit production manager on Band of the Hand. Did you ever see Band of the Hand?
I don't think I've ever heard of Band of the Hand.
Okay, it's a really bad movie from the 80s about a group of about this guy who mentors like five street hoodlums and trains them, and then the mentor gets killed and they want their revenge. Yeah, typical type of stories that we that they keep using over and over, I guess you could
Hmm.
So yeah, and IMDb doesn't really say much about him either, besides the various credits that he has. So can't give you any more information besides that.
Fair
But
enough.
it's framed very nicely, and then we the camera zooms in on Andy just watching and looking completely distraught, watching his watching something. Again, we don't see at this point what it is that he's watching, and then we're back to the DA, and he says they had sinned, but was their crime so great as to merit a death sentence? Now, while you think about that, think about this. And you see him pick up the revolver, and he goes, "A revolver holds six bullets, not eight. I submit that this was not a hot-blooded crime of passion." That could be understood. That could at least be understood, if not condoned. No, this was revenge of a much more brutal and cold-blooded nature. Consider this. Four bullets per victim. And at this point the camera changes, and we get to see the couple getting hot and heavy. And obviously Andy himself can't see this. It's not something that you can see through the window, because they're not in front of the window. But as we're seeing this, before the shot leaves the DA, we see that it says, based on the short novel Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption, Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption. It doesn't even have the word "the" in there, which is I wonder if that's considered a goof, or if that yeah, the book is "and the," so they screwed up here. That's really interesting. That is so interesting that they would have messed up on something so, I guess, simple.
Yeah, like, why not just have a "the" in there?
Yeah, like, why would someone why how could they miss that so simply, so easily?
Yeah, that's
Really
yeah, that makes
weird.
sense to me.
Because I mean, again, going back
Unless.
to IMDb says, based on the short novel Rita Hayworth and the Shawshank Redemption. So that's really weird that that word is missing. I didn't notice that till right now.
I mean, they're not charging by the letter for that.
Well, apparently they do. And but whenever I think of
Yeah.
charging by the letter, I always think of Three Amigos, where they have to send a telegram. Infamous. 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 Infamous means more than famous. The DA is definitely putting on a show here for this whole thing. My assumption is that he's vying for higher office at this point.
He's laying it on thick, especially because he's like a beautiful young woman and her lover laying dead in each other's arms. Like, that's overly dramatic. That's
Overly
really,
dramatic,
really intense.
but it does the job. There's
It absolutely
something they're
does.
trying
And
to
I
do,
think it
and it
adds.
works.
Absolutely. And I think the camera work helps too. The camera's very fluid in this, very flowing and moving. Like, there's not a lot of cuts to what he's doing. It's just a steady shot of him talking and explaining and showing the pistol and everything. Like, it's again, all of this is very building, not in like a traditional, we're building tension and we're doing this, but it just keeps growing and growing. And it almost like a frog in a boiling pot of water kind of thing. Like, you don't realize we've reached this tension until all of a sudden we make a cut. And then it's almost jarring the way we cut to, Andy Dufresne sitting there wide-eyed, not blinking, and then cut to again, the couple fumbling around at belts and waistbands and things like that. Like, it's because it's so flowing to all of a sudden get those cuts. It's like, whoa, hang on a second.
That's right. And again, the question is, are they showing us Quentin and Andy's wife to try to make us believe that he actually did it? Or are they showing it just to be able to, that we don't have to use our imagination about the fact that these people were having an affair? It wasn't it wasn't that Andy made a mistake or something like that. Here's proof that these people were having an affair. I don't know. As the minute gets ready to end, so we see she opens up his belt and is, as you said, fumbling around. Then that's where this minute ends. So, is there anything else you wanted to add about this particular minute?
I do like the lawyer, the actor playing the lawyer, Jeffrey DeMunn. Anytime he kind of shows up in something, I like seeing his face. Like, I really enjoy The Green Mile. So obviously he pops in there a lot. A lot of Frank Darabont, he's also in The Mist. But anytime he shows up,
Well,
no matter his role, I'm like, I like this guy.
he was also one of the main characters on
For a while,
Walking
yeah.
Dead. Yeah, he was on. He became a staple for
Yeah.
Darabont. He was
Yeah.
also in
So,
The Majestic. I don't know if you've ever seen The Majestic.
I don't think I have. That's the Jim Carrey one, right?
Yes. He
I
play, he's
that I have
the
not
he
seen.
plays the mayor in that one.
Okay. I bet you I would like his role in that too.
Well, I first of all, I love that movie, and I'm sure I'm going to bring that up a hell of a lot of times over the course of this entire season. And people are going to keep saying, "Why does he keep talking about The Majestic?"
I'm going to add that to my list right next to Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, and Hanover Street, and
Oh,
Man
you
Who
haven't
Never
watched him yet? It's been a few weeks.
Was.
It's been a few weeks. You haven't watched him yet.
Yeah, no, I haven't. I Time flies.
Yes, it does. It does. It does. But that's fine. I understand. I don't take it personally. I know that Nick has a very busy life, and doesn't find time to watch the movies that I tell him, that I suggest to him. How's that?
I think that's a fair assessment.
I think I actually need to fly out to Baltimore and give you a kick in the ass, and
That's
sit you down to watch some of that stuff. So
probably fair.
okay, so send me a ticket and I'll come.
Havsies?
I don't know if you want to commit to that. I'm gonna warn you beforehand before I agree to something.
Well, I figure with the long flight, your leg will be a little tired, and then you'll forget all about the kick in the ass, and we'll just go right to the movie.
Okay, that's fine. That okay. That's fair. That's fair. I think you made a good point. Made a good point. All right. So today's segment is called Main Man Monday, where my guest will give their top five Stephen King adaptations. So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
My number five is a aforementioned The Mist. Number four is what we're talking about now, Shawshank. Number three is The Green Mile. Number two is Pet Sematary, the one from 1989. And obviously, number one is The Shining.
Very nice. That is a very nice list. I for some
Thank you.
reason I thought I thought you'd have Stand By Me on your list. I don't know why. I don't know why I had that feeling, but
It's in the
apparently I
top 10.
was wrong.
It's in the top 10.
Okay. That's fair. I gotta rewatch the missed one. I keep telling myself I gotta rewatch because I like Darabont stuff so much. So, it makes sense. All right. So now we will play the first of two daily games. So we will get ready to spin the wheel. We'll first play the game of Name That Book Adaptation. So basically, the idea here is that as we talk today, the name of the original novel and the name of the movie are not the same. And besides the fact that they got it wrong here. Yeah. But so I'm going to give you the original name of a novel, and I will tell you what year the movie came out, and you have to try and guess what movie we are talking about. And I made sure to pick ones that are not like very close to one another, meaning one of the options when I was doing it was Schindler's Ark. What movie could that be? So the ones that are completely obvious, it's sort of left off the list. Yeah. All right, so let's spin the wheel and see what we. Okay, this is a movie from 1964. All right, starring Vincent Price. That the novel that it's based on is called I Am Legend.
Well, that's funny.
It's funny,
Okay.
but it is connected. So think about it from that perspective.
Well, I'm Legend, Will Smith. I know it's not the same thing, but I'm just you said
No,
it's connected, so.
it's based on it's based on the same story.
Oh, okay. I really don't know any Vincent Price films, so I'm just gonna say, I don't know, The Last Man. The
Very close.
final
It's
guy. I'm gonna say
very
the
no, you're right. Very, very close. It's called The Last Man on Earth. So that's pretty good.
Okay, I'm feeling it. I'll take a halfsie on that one.
That's more than half. You started saying the name of the title, so that's more than half. Nice,
Okay.
nicely done. Nicely done.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, and now we will play the second game where you will have three choices each day. There were three entries, I guess. And the name of this game is High Low. And what I did was I made a list of every Oscar Best Picture Oscar nominee since 1950 till now. And you're gonna randomly get three of these that you have to try and guess what the IMDb rating is and what the Rotten Tomato rating is. Now, Shawshank, for instance, has a 9.3 IMDb rating and a 91% Rotten Tomatoes. So it's the idea of, obviously it's going to be lower than Shawshank from IMDb for sure, because nothing is higher. little bit of when you're at the top, you can't go above. Let's spin the wheel and see what you get. Okay, your first movie is the 2020 film Mank. So what do you think the IMDb rating is, and what do you think the Rotten Tomato rating?
I'm going to say for Mank, that's Gary Oldman, right? Okay. I'm going to say, let's say the IMDb is 8.1 and the Rotten Tomatoes is like I bet you critically it was well, but not audience wise. So let's go 87%.
Okay, so you were closer on the Rotten Tomatoes because it's 83%,
Ah, oh, okay.
and the IMDb is a 6.8.
Ooh, oof.
Yes.
Jeez. I clearly liked that movie a little bit more than most people did.
I wasn't very much of a fan of that movie.
Ooh.
I didn't like it so much. Maybe I need to watch it again.
I'm a sucker for Gary Oldman.
I'm not saying I didn't like his performance. I just didn't find I was I was hoping that it would be a more interesting movie because it's based on, Orson Welles and the whole idea of Rosebud.
Makes sense. Makes sense.
All right, so let's spin the wheel for your next one. Okay, this is one that you'll probably be very happy that you got. The 1979 film Apocalypse Now.
Hey, all right. So Apocalypse Now, I immediately want to jump to the nines, but I'm gonna go a little lower, and I'm gonna say on IMDb it's a 8.9, and Rotten Tomatoes has it like a 97%.
Well, once again, you were very close on the Rotten Tomatoes. It's 98%.
Wow.
And on IMDb, it has an 8.4.
Okay. 8.4 is respectable. I feel like it should be a little bit higher, but it's not
Yeah,
bad.
I think it should be higher also. But yeah. But the fact that it is a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes is just amazing.
Yeah, that's like, yeah.
Right. I mean, what did I say? Shawshank was 91. There are 9% of the people that reviewed Shawshank that didn't like it, but you only have 2% that didn't like Apocalypse Now. So
Yeah,
that's very
which
impressive.
it absolutely is. And then sometimes I find it interesting too how IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes, they're not more similar, but I guess IMDb is maybe more like user and audience driven than it is like critically. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that I think goes without saying. All right, and let's spin the wheel now for your third and final one. And around and around and around the wheel goes. Okay, the 2010 film The Fighter with Christian Bale.
Okay, yeah, and Marky Mark.
Yes.
I'm gonna say that IMDb has it at a 7.9, although I feel like it's probably gonna be in the eights for some weird reason. But I'm gonna stick with my 7.9, and my Rotten Tomato score is gonna be also an 89.
You are so close on both of those. So IMDb is 7.8.
Oh.
All right, and Rotten Tomatoes is a 91.
Wow. That's kind of funny though, considering that I was kind of feeling the opposite and how it was going to be in the nines in
That's right.
Rotten Tomato or
Yeah,
IMDb.
but it worked for you.
Nice. I'll take it. I'll take
Yeah.
that all day,
Well,
especially
yeah,
after the bank.
whether you want to take it or not, it doesn't matter because that's what
That's
it
true. That is true.
All right. So, Nick, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Nick Rehack?
Absolutely. You can find me over at rabbitholepodcasts.com. I'm on two programs over there, Lyrical Innuendo with Bubba Wheat, where he and myself, we take a listen to a song and read its lyrics and determine if it's about sex, drugs, or just good old-fashioned rock and roll. And there's also Play MST for Me with Jason Soto. He has seen every single episode of Mystery Science Theater, and I have seen a bunch of them now, but before I had not. So he's taking me through every single episode of that show, beginning to end, and we're just having a lot of fun doing it. So if you're into those two ideas, go head over to rabbitholepodcast.com and check that out.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movearound.net. So until tomorrow, get busy living.
Or get busy dying.